ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Nightlife. News breakdown.
Well, mortgage borrowers might have held their breath slightly until this afternoon, thinking the Reserve Bank just might decide to raise interest rates again to extinguish any inflationary embers. But phew, the bank has decided to leave interest rates on hold at 4.35%. It does, however, say that the inflation rate is taking longer than expected to return to the bank's target band of between 2 and 3%. And the RBA Governor Michelle Bullock, while acknowledging that high rates are causing a lot of pain to mortgagees, says the board's not willing to risk a return to rising inflation.
We believe we have rates at the right level to return inflation to the target range next year. But as we've said in the past, getting inflation back to target will take time. And I think the path will likely continue to be bumpy, and we should all be prepared for that.
Well, OK. Yes, the board singled out higher petrol prices as being a big part of the struggle to lower inflation. Well, not much any of us can do about that, don't we know it? Joining us again for the Nightlife News Breakdowns, Ron Mizen, Senior Political Reporter with the Australian Financial Review. Ron, good to have your time. Thank you.
Good evening, Philip, and good evening to everyone out there tonight.
What are you making of the RBA's decision-making process here? Steady as we go for a fourth consecutive meeting?
I think, as you say, it'll be very much welcomed by households out there. The interesting thing from today is that the RBA upgraded its forecasts for what will happen with inflation over the next 2 years. Now, traditionally, when we see things like that, it would hint, and there was some speculation that the RBA could raise the cash rate, but it indicates today that the threshold for doing so is actually quite high. Indicating that economists believe that perhaps we won't necessarily see another interest rate rise, which will be welcome relief to many, but we perhaps will see, and we're likely to see, rates stay higher for longer, or we might see that first rate cut come in the sort of middle of next year, or if not in the second half of next year, at least according to the Reserve Bank's own forecasts.
That's right, exactly. It's when there was a lot of expectation, wasn't there, that there would be a rate cut in maybe September this year. The RBA has to consider employment too, as well as quelling inflation. How's that juggle going?
Yeah, look, I think employment has been much stronger than the RBA expected, and Governor Michelle Bullock today said that that was a good thing. Ultimately, more people in work is a good thing. The RBA now has to consider its dual mandate of both maintaining full employment but also managing inflation. Look, the latest RBA statement on monetary policy also out today suggested that unemployment continues to be below where the RBA thinks is neutral, which effectively means the unemployment rate at which it's not adding to inflation. So it thinks that there will be an increase in the unemployment rate over coming months. But that, and the government was pretty clear on this today, that doesn't necessarily mean that people will lose their jobs overall. The overall level of employment will fall. Mm. It simply means that as more people enter into the labour market, they won't be snapped up as quickly as they have been. So with immigration running where it is, at the moment the economy has been absorbing a lot of that because businesses have been really desperate to get workers, and we'll probably see that slow, and it's that process, that mechanical process, that will see that that increase in the unemployment rate.
Mm. Australians, of course, are relatively exposed to variable interest rates, aren't we, and being squeezed by the fastest ramping on borrowing costs in nearly 30 years. That's a damper on inflation itself, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that is the main avenue through which interest rates affect the economy, is through households and the additional amount that they have to pay. It also does affect business lending and various other avenues as well, but certainly the most effective way is for that 40% of Australian households that hold a mortgage. I mean, what we saw today, again, the RBA thinks that there are the vast majority of Australians are holding up okay at the moment in terms of being able to repay that those mortgages. But they are also pulling back significantly on spending in other areas. We saw the volume of retail sales figures come out today. That showed that there had been a significant decline in the first 3 months of the year. But the RBA is also very cognizant of the fact that there are a cohort of people doing it very, very tough at the moment. Mm. But it's very difficult for them because ultimately, their job is inflation and that unemployment rate. And beyond that, they really say, well, that's for the federal government and for others to think about.
Yeah, exactly. All right, look, to a couple of concerning stories outside the domestic realm. Firstly, this incident over international waters near South Korea on the weekend, where a Chinese warplane actually fired a flare near an Australian Navy helicopter. It forced the pilot to take evasive action. Now, the Australian Defence Forces described it as unsafe, I think, which expresses things mildly, because it
seems like a statement of the obvious, doesn't it?
Exactly. It posed a risk to the aircraft and personnel. The Navy was enforcing sanctions against North Korea when the incident occurred, and this is under the auspices of the UN. Australia has used diplomatic and defence channels to express some deep concerns to the Chinese, as you would expect. Reactions? The opposition leader Peter Dutton, a former defence minister, weighed in quickly, expressing concerns for the safety of personnel.
I fear that an Australian Defence Force member or members are going to lose their lives at some point because there will be an error in judgment by one of the fighter pilots or one of the naval personnel from the China side.
Yeah, well, this remains, of course, a distinct possibility. He went on.
We've seen this movie before, but it is at some stage going to escalate, perhaps by accident, but it'll be that unintended consequence and Australian Defence Force personnel will pay with their lives, and we don't want to see that.
What we do about it, of course, is another matter. The Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, says the Chinese are well aware of the Australian concern about the incident.
We regard this as unprofessional and that it is unacceptable, and we've made clear that view to Beijing, both through Beijing and also through Canberra.
Ron, what do you make of this government response? Is it strong enough? I mean, it seems pretty mild, unprofessional. I mean, he could have used stronger language, couldn't he?
Yeah, look, I think the government is very aware that it's got into a lot of effort over recent months and over the past 2 years, really, of trying to rebuild that very frosty relationship with Beijing and to have those trade sanctions that were imposed on a range of Australian products, lobster, wine, beef, barley, coal, etc., removed. And look, this is not the first time we've seen over the past year this kind of incident where the Australian Defence Force has kind of said that Beijing is engaged in some unsafe behaviour. We had the situation where sonar pulses were released near Australian divers a few months back. I mean, the interesting thing about this is that Anthony Albanese, of course, says that it's Beijing acting unsafely. He says he will lodge a formal complaint with the Beijing government. But at the same time, China says that on the other side of the equation, that it was actually Australia acting inappropriately and unsafe by going too close to China's territorial airspace. It's hardly surprising each side will blame each other, but it perhaps goes to show, Philip, I think that, you know, while at the high level relationships are improving and everyone's keen to sort of, you know, show that there's the talking is going on, at that sort of military level, there's certainly a bit of tension going on there.
They're not on the same email list, obviously, no.
Yeah, well, yeah, and that's a good way of putting it. Mm.
Look, just finally to Rafah and the Middle East conflict, the Israeli military has confirmed that its soldiers now have control of the Palestinian side of the border crossing between Gaza and Egypt. That's the Rafah crossing. This has been the major crossing point for aid during the Israel-Gaza war. They say they're determined to push ahead with the incursion into Rafah. They say they've got intelligence that Hamas militants are operating in the area and Israeli soldiers and tanks are now in control on the ground, but the Israelis insist it's limited and targeted, whatever that means, and have not indicated whether or not ground forces will invade into other parts of Rafah. Ron, the Israelis continue to make the most of this wartime mobilisation to maximise their control of Gaza, but this comes even after Hamas said that it had now accepted a Gaza ceasefire proposal put forward by Qatari and Egyptian mediators. But Israel isn't on board, it seems. They're determined, not keen to negotiate. What do we make of this?
Yeah, well, look, there was certainly some commentary from inside the Israeli government, sources sort of talking to the media in the past few hours suggesting that that the ceasefire proposal put forward was completely unacceptable to them. And in fact, their view was that it was sort of designed to you know, further place pressure on it not to go into Rafah. Now, of course, there are a million, expected to be about a million Palestinians currently in that small part of the Gaza Strip. As you note, Israel does have control of the border crossing now, which is the primary entry point for aid going into Gaza. We did see that the Israelis reportedly dropped leaflets and information basically telling people to move to a sort of safe humanitarian zone just outside of Rafah, which clearly indicates that perhaps they're expecting to ramp up military engagement further. Certainly there have already been airstrikes on targets within Rafah, and the Gazan authorities say that has resulted in deaths. But, you know, this is the sort of most southern tip of the Gaza Strip. The Israeli government has obviously moved, you know, from north to south very efficiently on their hunt, they say, to root out militants. But, you know, we're now getting to the very pointy end. The US government has basically called for a plan from Israel to say how they will effectively manage the humanitarian risk that exists in that space. And they say at this stage they've heard nothing back. So, you know, it's not looking good.
It is not. It is not. All right, Ron, good to talk. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil. Appreciate your time.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife. Yeah.